Hare Krishna. So today we begin with the next section of the Ishopanishad, that is the fourth section. In the last section we discussed about Vidya and Avidya, that was mantras 9, 10 and 11. Now the next section is in structure and in analysis similar to the previous section. That was a 3 mantra section, this is also a 3 mantra section. And there also the structure is using similar methods, but only instead of Vidya and Avidya, here there is Sambhuti and Asambhuti. So let's look at this. So the first mantra says, this 12th mantra, it says Asambhuti takes to darkness and Sambhuti takes to greater darkness. So actually, here Asambhuti, what it refers to, basically it refers to something non-eternal. Sambhuti refers to something eternal. So the meanings of these we will discuss. Now specifically it is the worship of Asambhuti takes to darkness and worship of Sambhuti to greater darkness. To keep it short, we are using Sambhuti and Asambhuti. Now the next mantra says Asambhuti gives one result, Sambhuti gives another result. So now there is an obvious contradiction if we just go by linearly, because 12th is saying that both Asambhuti and Sambhuti take on to darkness only. So here Asambhuti and Sambhuti mean something different in 13 as compared to 12. And then in 14, it is said that Asambhuti and Sambhuti together grant immortality. So like the previous set of mantras, let us look at the meanings which Srila Prabhupada explains. So Asambhuti refers to the demigods. So worship of the demigods leads to darkness. And Sambhuti here is, just like earlier it was so-called knowledge, so here is so-called understanding of the absolute truth. So that is impersonal absolute. And the worship of the impersonal absolute leads to greater darkness. That is mantra 12. We'll see what this darkness refers to and how demigod worship or impersonal worship can lead to darkness. But for now, then there is Sambhuti gives one result, Asambhuti gives another result. So in mantra 13, Asambhuti refers to anything other than the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So we get one result by that, and by worshipping the Supreme Personality of Godhead, we get another result. And in last mantra, I was saying that both Sambhuti and Asambhuti together grant eternity. So that means it refers to, we need to know the material world to be able to navigate through the material world, and we need to know the Supreme Lord to attain the Supreme Lord. So there, Asambhuti refers to knowledge of the material world, and Sambhuti refers to knowledge of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So for understanding the meanings, we need to see the text and the context. If we just look at the text, we will get completely confused. So the meanings of the words are not just stored in a dictionary. Meanings, semantics, is a profound branch of knowledge. And in general, in semantics, the primary focus is often on the science of meanings, how words' meanings are. So some people have the idea that a meaning of a word is a dictionary and this is the meaning. So are meanings something which is stored in the dictionary, and are words simply carriers of meaning? Like say there's an electric wire and then electricity is injected from here and electricity is taken out from there. So are words simply conveyors of meaning? So the meaning is something which is there in the minds of the people, and words are tools by the meaning which the meanings are conveyed. Or are the meanings intrinsic to the words? So actually it's a combination of both. Words have certain meanings, but people use the words in certain contexts, and accordingly also the meaning gets changed. So the way the words are used have to be understood based on both the text and the context. That means what is the text means, what is the literal meaning of the word, and context is what is the situation surrounding in which the word is used. So if we look at both these things, what we will understand is that there is a necessity for a holistic understanding. Now let's look at this particular verse.
अंधं तमः प्रविशन्ति ये संभूतिम उपासते ततो भूय इव ते तमो यौ संभूत्यामृतः.
सो अंधम तमः प्रविशन्ति, दे एंटर इनटू डार्कनेस, दोज हु असंभूतिम उपासते, दोज हु वर्शिप द असंभूति. एंड ततो भूय इव ते तमो, इनटू ग्रेटर डार्कनेस गो दोज यौ संभूत्यामृतः. सो अर्लियर इट वाज विद्यायामृतः. सो Srila Prabhupada translates this as, those who are engaged in the worship of demigods enter into the darkest region of ignorance, and still more so do the worshippers of the impersonal absolute. In this way, this verse talks about two primary ways by which the religious, those who are within the Vedic path or in general in the spiritual path, they get deviated from the Supreme Lord. They get deviated. And the destinations of those people who get deviated on the path of religion but away from the Supreme Lord, that is talked about. So let us look at an overview of this purport. So Srila Prabhupada basically talks about three main themes. The first point he makes is that even the demigods and rishis misunderstand the absolute to be truth to be impersonal, that he talks in paragraphs 1 to 3. In paragraphs 4 to 7 he mentions demigod worshippers stay in the dark material world. And after that, in the last paragraph, Srila Prabhupada mentions that impersonalists who mislead people go to the darkest regions of hell. So let's look at these one by one. Now, the demigods and rishis misunderstand the Supreme Absolute Truth. This is mentioned repeatedly in the scriptures. The Absolute Truth, the Supreme Lord, is so great that it is not easy for him to be understood. In the Bhagavad Gita, Name vidhu suraganaha prabhavam namaharshayaha aham adirhi devanam maharshinam cha sarvashaha. So Krishna says in 10.2 in the Bhagavad Gita, Name viduhu, I am not known. Suraganaha, the devatas don't know me. Maharishya, even the rishis don't know me. Why? Because I am their source. And the same point, after Krishna finishes the Chatushloki Bhagavad Gita from 10.8 to 11, then when Arjuna is giving his understanding, then he says in 10.14 that Nahite Bhagavan Vyaktim Vidur Devanadanavaha. He says that, O Bhagavan, you are a Vyakti. But what kind of Vyakti you are? What kind of person you are? Vidur Deva Nadanavaha. Neither the gods nor the demons, they understand. So it's complex. Similarly, the Bhagavatam says, Muhiyanti Yat Surayaha. In the first verse itself, it says that by that absolute truth, even the Suras are bewildered. And the conclusion of the Bhagavatam, one of the last verses, Yasyantah na vidu sura sura ganaha devaya tasmai namaha. Yasya antaha, whose anta na viduhu. People don't know. Who don't know? Sura sura ganaha. So not only the asuras, even the suras don't know. Devaya tasmai namaha. So we cannot understand that absolute truth. We can simply offer obeisances to that absolute truth. So the theme that the absolute truth is not easy to understand, even for the gods, is well reiterated in the scriptures. Now the question comes, if they don't understand him, what does it mean? They obviously go and pray to Vishnu whenever they are in danger, and they know there is some higher being. But what is their conception? Srila Prabhupada tells that when we don't have an understanding, often we get a misunderstanding. So they know they have to go to Vishnu and pray to him for help whenever they're in trouble, and they do that. But they tend to think that actually beyond Vishnu is some light, and that is the ultimate truth. So they misunderstand the absolute truth to be impersonal. So if the demigods also misunderstand, then what to speak of all of us? So we have to be very careful in how we understand. Even Brahmaji, it is said, that Bhagavatam second canto, that first time when he heard the Vedic literature, he thought that the import of the Vedic literature was karma. the path of karma, doing fruitive activity according to religious rituals. That is the import, the essential meaning of the Vedic literature. Second time he heard it, he thought that the meaning is jnana, that it is impersonal speculation so that one can attain impersonal lore. And the third time he heard the Vedas, then he understood actually the conclusion is bhakti. So that was the conclusive understanding, the correct understanding. So this is an evolution. It takes time even for Brahmaji to understand the correct conclusion of the Vedic literature, what to speak of others. So this is a theme that is there. Absolute truth is not very easy to understand. So now the people in this world, when they have some religious inclination, they conceive of the absolute truth as a multiplicity of beings. They say, oh, there are many gods, different gods for different departments, and they worship those gods. Or they may conceive of the absolute truth as some impersonal light. So let's look at these. Now, andham tamah pravishanti, they enter into darkness. What does it mean here? It simply means that the demigod worshippers stay in the dark material world. They continue to stay in this material world, just as we discussed earlier, that those who pursue sense gratification, they continue on in the dark material world. Now, demigod worshippers may not get degraded, but they don't get substantially elevated. Srila Prabhupada gives the example that when a person is in a jail, whether a person is tied by iron shackles or golden shackles, it really doesn't make a lot of difference because they are shackles either way. So even if the demigod worshippers get some material benefits, but still they stay in ignorance of spiritual truth. And as long as they're in ignorance of spiritual truth, they have to continue on going round and round in the cycle of birth and death. So if they continue to go on a cycle of birth and death, that means they're staying in darkness. And that is what is being regretted over here. Andham tamaha pravishanti. So the Upanishads, their focus is to elevate people to the highest goal. And for elevating them to the highest goal, all other goals, even if they are higher than the present goal, are not encouraged. So that people can focus simply on the highest goal. Everything else is put aside. So as we say often, the good is the worst enemy of the best. So there is the best thing that we can do, but the good thing is also not bad. So often we do the good thing and miss out on the chance to do the best thing. So the demigod worship is not necessarily bad. It is good, it is pious, it is religious, but it is often the worst enemy of the best. And the same applies to the impersonal worship also. So now, when the good is misunderstood to be the best, then it becomes a far more serious problem. It's one thing to choose the good instead of the best, but it's quite another thing to declare the good to be the best and to declare the best to be the lower. So let's see how this happens. Before that, we'll look at what is the logic of demigod worship. So if demigod worship is ultimately condemned, then why is it talked about in the Vedic literature? What is the purpose of the Vedic literature giving the system of demigod worship? The whole purpose is to enable people to get gradually elevated. Different people have different natures, and depending on their nature, they cannot get elevated directly. So if they are unable to be attracted to the Supreme Lord, then an alternative is provided in the form of intermediary. So the Lord is here, the conditioned souls are here. If they cannot worship the Supreme Lord, then intermediaries are provided in the form of the demigods. Let's understand this with an example. So in the Bible, there is the famous story of the prodigal son. So there was a wealthy father, and his son wanted to have his own share of the inheritance, and he took it insistently and went, squandered away all the wealth, and then fell into poverty, and then had to live under an abusive master. And finally, he, becoming frustrated, he decided, still fearful whether I can go back to my father, what face will I show to my father, but still he decided to go back. And when he returned back, at that time, his father welcomed him happily. So this is the story of how God loves us selflessly. That although we turn away from Him, although we squander away whatever He has given us, still when we want to come back to Him, He welcomes us. So this is a story which talks about the selflessness of God's love, and it is wonderful. But the Vedic scripture describes that God's love is much more than this. God's love is far greater and far deeper. That means God not only welcomes us back when we turn to Him, but He also strives to get us back. He strives multifariously to get us back. And one such extraordinary effort of His is the system of demigod worship. So to understand this, let's look at the system of demigod worship from a perspective of the Vedic literature. So the great sage Yajnavalkya is asked the question, Kati Devaha, how many devas are there? So his answer progresses from 3003, 303, 33, 6, 3, 2 and finally 1. And he answers as if there is no contradiction inherent in the various answers. So now, how many gods are there? So he describes that there are many and there is one only. How is that? Because it's like there is one king and he has many ministers. So all the ministers are government authorities. And how many government authorities are there? Okay, there are 25 government authorities. There are 50 government authorities. But ultimately, how many government authorities are there? Okay, there are 5 major departments. Okay, how many government authorities are there? Ultimately, one authority, there is the king. So like that, Kati Devaha, this is a sequence that is ascending upwards. And the purpose of this ascending sequence is to illustrate the point that it's not that all the gods are the same, but all the gods are a part of the same system of demigod work, of arrangement by the Supreme Lord, by which people can get elevated and eventually liberated. Now when people have to turn back to the Supreme Lord, what is primarily required for that is some arrangement by which they can come to Him. So what is that arrangement? That arrangement is demigod worship. Let's look at this now. So here, this may seem a little complicated, but I'll try to keep things simple. First, let's look at the king. So there's the wealthy father and his son. He comes back home. Now he's not ready to come back home. That is the way we are explaining the story. So the father wants his son to come back. So the father has initially gone away from the father's kingdom, has gone to some other place and is serving some other master who is exploiting that person, making the son work very hard and giving him only a pittance. So then the father knows that my son has some inimical feelings towards me. So even if I will invite him back, he will not come. So the father decides to send his own minister. He says, go and invite him back. Now when he invites him back, the minister says, okay, you are being paid over here. I'll pay you. Why don't you come and work with me? Now the son may not know that this minister is working for my father only. He's okay, how much will you give me? Okay, you will pay me that much. I'll take good care of you, better than what you have over it. Okay, come back. So now when the son agrees, the son has now come back to the kingdom of the father. Although he's not come back to the home of the father, he has come back to the kingdom of the father. For what purpose? He has come back to the kingdom of the father, not to be reunited with his father, but just because he felt that there are better material facilities available over here. I'm being paid better, I'll be taken care of better. But indirectly, through the minister, the father has arranged for taking better care of the son, and the father has got the son back into the kingdom. The king has brought back his prince within his jurisdiction. Now, as the prince is serving the minister, gradually he sees that the minister is paying me, but this minister is also serving someone. Who is he serving? And he find out the minister is serving the king. And who is the king? He comes to know that this person is the king. It's my father only. He may not want to serve his father, but he thinks that if this minister is serving the king, if I serve the king, will he pay me better? Then he approaches the king. He says, will you employ me? He says, you are my son. Why do I have to employ you? Come and stay with me. My kingdom is your, my whole palace is yours. Come and stay. He says, no. I don't want that. Will you accept me? If I work for you, how much will you pay me? He says, okay, whatever you want. I'll pay you. father wants the son to come closer to him. So at least instead of working in the minister's ministry, he can work directly with him. So he offers him a raise and invites him. Now gradually the son starts seeing, the prince starts seeing that my father, the king, is a really kind-hearted person. Why did I ever leave him and go away? And gradually by serving him, by seeing him, by associating with him, his affection awakens. And then he says, Father, can I come back home? Welcome, my dear son. I was just waiting for you to come back. And that's how the father and the son get reunited. So similarly, there is a progression by which the demigod worship helps the souls come back to Krishna. So when the souls have turned away from Krishna and are living materialistically, the demigods are ministers of Krishna. Krishna is the prime minister, demigods are the ministers who have been allocated different departments in the universal cabinet. And these demigods, they tell Krishna, they offer to their worshippers or their potential worshippers the opportunity to get material benefits but within a religious context. So when the people start coming to the demigod worship, they are not coming for any selfless motive. They are coming for material motives only. But what is happening? Because the demigods are the representatives of Krishna, so they are coming in the house of the Vedas. And when they come in the house of the Vedas, that is safer. They are. Srila Prabhupada has asked, who is better? A person who is worshipping a devata within the Vedic tradition or a person who is worshipping God in some other religious tradition, in one of the Abrahamic religions. Prabhupada said that the demigod worshipper is better because he's in the house of the Vedas. Of course, we also have to see if the person who is worshipping God in the Abrahamic tradition has a very advanced level of devotion to God, then that things may be different. But on an average religious level, to be in the house of the Vedas is safer. So what has happened is, people have come closer to the Vedic, to the Supreme Lord through the arrangement of demigod worship. So now after they worship the demigods, gradually they start, demigods, they come to know through the Vedic culture, demigods also servants of the Supreme Lord, and they come to the Supreme Lord. But initially when they come to the Supreme Lord, they're not coming out of love. I think, you know, this demigod was giving me some material results, will you also give me results? You tell Krishna. Yes, Krishna says, surely, whatever you want. But then Krishna purifies them. By their contact with Krishna elevates them, and they develop, their love for Krishna awakens, and then they become pure devotees and they return back to Krishna. So let's look at this now. So essentially what this table is saying is, so the first column is talking about what the prince is doing. The second column is talking about what the conditioned soul is doing. The third column is talking about what the motive is for the prince to do that. And from the philosophical point of view, when somebody is doing this, what is the religious level? So when the prince has gone and is serving some other lord outside, so like that, souls are serving some other people in this world. So those people, they are semi-gods. Say me God, I am God, obey me, my way or the highway. So every boss, wherever he is, thinks that I am God. In a small sense, I am the God of this office, I am the God of this house, I am the God of this company. So people are serving. What is their motive? This wealth. So this is materialism. Now, when the prince comes to the father's kingdom and starts serving the minister, that is like the soul coming and serving the devata. Just as the prince's motive is wealth, similarly, devata's, the conditioned soul's motive is also material. So this is karmakanda, that is religious materialism. Then when the prince starts serving the king, it's like conditioned soul comes to Krishna. But still the prince's motive is just to earn from the king. Similarly, the conditioned soul motive is to simply worship Krishna for material gain. So this is, but because it is directed towards Krishna, it is not karmakanda, it is sakam bhakti now. And then when the prince gets reunited with the father and starts serving him with love, that is similar to the conditioned soul starts loving Krishna and starts practicing Shuddha Bhakti. So this is the slow, steady way by which the system of demigod worship is meant to elevate people. So now, is demigod worship good or bad? What is the purpose of demigod worship? it is actually, in one sense, very good because it is accommodating. So this Vedic system of multi-level worship, multi-level worship means if you cannot worship the Supreme Lord, worship some intermediary representatives of the Supreme Lord. It bears testimony to a unique concern for the individuality of the worshipper. You know, every worshipper is an individual. That individual may not be ready to worship the Supreme Lord. So other religions say there is only one true God, all other gods are false. You have to reject all the other gods and worship that one Supreme God. So then if people are not ready to worship that Supreme God, then there is no way for them to advance. But Krishna is so kind that, okay, you can't worship me because of your conditionings, your nature, you're not able to worship me, fine. You can worship some representatives of mine. So Krishna accommodates the individuality of the worship. Along with that, this system of multi-level worship also, it bears testimony to an unparalleled flexibility of the worshipable in making himself accessible. That means Krishna is making himself accessible over here. And just like the father, he says, even if you don't want to serve me, my dear son, still, you know, I am available for you through my minister. If you come in the kingdom, I will take care of you through my minister. So like that, Krishna makes himself accessible, makes a connection to himself available through the demigod worship. So here we see that the demigod worship is a manifestation of Krishna's compassion. In fact, Krishna's non-enviousness. That how can the same Supreme Lord is so eager to reach out to people that he doesn't even care whether they are worshipping him or not. Doesn't care in the sense that he doesn't, even if they worship some of his representatives, it's fine. At least they are getting elevated. And then eventually, when they are elevated enough, Krishna guides them to the higher understanding. So, now when we look at the system of demigod worship, whether it is good or bad, that has to be understood based on the level of a person. So, if a person is at a particular level, the demigod worship system may be good. If the person is not at that level, the demigod worship system may not be good. So let's look at this logic of demigod worship. So if there is a student who has got 60% marks, if the score, what is 60% good or bad? It will depend on what is the previous level of the student. If the student was getting 80%, then coming to 60% is bad. The student is getting 40%, 60% is good. So envision there are two sons of a father, and both of them have got the results, and both of them have got 60%. And one of them used to get 40%. The son says, Father, I have got 60%. Father pats his back, shabash, well done, my boy, I'm proud of you. And the other son used to get 80%, and he comes to his father and says, Father, I got 60%. Slaps his back. Padmash, what have you done? You disgraced me. Why have you got such poor marks? Now the second son said, both of us got 60%. He was praised, I was chastised. Why? It's because your level is different. So similarly, is demigod worship good or bad? It will depend on what the level that a person is at. If the person is just living materialistically, that is like at 40% marks, then to come to 60% level is progress. So to come from godless materialism to religious materialism is progress. But if somebody can worship, directly come to the worship of Krishna, somebody at a level of intellectual understanding and spiritual evolution by which one can worship Krishna, then for such a person to worship the devatas, it is like a step down. It is going down from 80% to 60%. So Krishna will tell in the Bhagavad Gita that alpa medhasaha, those who worship the demigods are less intelligent. So it's going back to the analogy. If the prince is staying in the father's house and is ready to serve the father and be happy there, the prince says, I will go and serve the minister. He says, not required. You are my son. You stay with me. You serve me. And you be happy with me. You love me. So what is good or bad depends on the level at which a person is. So the demigod worship system is good for those who are at a level of godless materialism, but is undesirable for those who are at a higher level of understanding and spiritual evolution. Now, the Upanishads, Ishvarupanishad, points us towards the highest absolute truth. So those who can come to 80%, For them, 60% is undesirable. So like that, from that perspective, the 60% is the elevation of 60-40%, but 60% is still in the material world. And that's why the demigod worship system is not spoken of highly over here. It keeps people in the cycle of birth and death. So before discussing the problem, let's look further how in some cases the system can elevate people. So there are many cases in history. For example, there's a story of Vallabhacharya. Now, Vallabhacharya was a devotee worshipper of both Shiva and Vishnu. So one time he had some great reversal in his life. So he went to a Shiva temple and started offering fervent prayers. And when he offered those prayers, at that time, Lord Shiva appeared in front of him. And Lord Shiva asked him, "What do you want? I'm pleased with you." So Vallabhacharya, he said, "My dear Lord, whatever you wish to give me, whatever is most dear to you, please give it to me." So Lord Shiva smiled brightly. And then he was given a DT of Lord Krishna, "This is my dearmost object of love." And then he went on and became a devotee of Krishna. So here we see a demigod worshipper, or a person who did demigod worship, being elevated to devotional understanding. Similarly, there is in Chaitanya Charitamrita the story of Keshav Kashmiri. Now, Keshav Kashmiri was a great worshipper of Saraswati Devi. And when he was worshipping Saraswati Devi, at that time, she had given a blessing that you will defeat all other scholars. Nobody will be able to defeat you. So he had gone around defeating everyone else and having a victory sheet, a Jayapatra, where everybody would have to sign that I have been defeated by Keshav Kashmiri. So when he came to Mayapur and met to Navadvip, and he met Chaitanya Mahaprabhu over there. He was Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was small at that time, relatively speaking. He was called Nimai Pandit. So Nimai Pandit had an informal discussion with him in which he was completely flummoxed. Became tongue-tied and didn't know what to do. So, he came. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu did not humiliate him, but told him, "Please go, think about it, study your books, come back tomorrow and we'll continue the discussion." So, when he came back to his place, he was devastated. His ego was shattered in many ways. And he came forward and fell at the feet of his Saraswati deity and begged her. He says, "What is this? You had promised me that I'll never be defeated. Why did you forsake me like this? Have I offended you? Please tell me what happened." And as he was praying like this, he fell asleep in his moroseness. And then Saraswati Devi came in and he said, why did you forsake me? You told me that I would never be defeated by anyone in the world." He said, "I did not forsake you. My promise was that you will not be defeated by anyone in this world. But the person whom you met was not from this world. He's the Supreme Lord. He's the Lord of my Lord. My Lord is Brahma and Brahma's master. Brahma's ultimate master is Lord Krishna, Govinda Madhi Purushima. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is not different from Krishna." So, she told him like this. At that time, he realized the absolute truth. He said that, she told him, "My greatest blessing is not that you are made a world champion scholar. My greatest blessing is that you attain the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord. Please go and surrender to him." And then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu did that. Keshav Kashmiri did that. So here Saraswati Devi guided him to Vishnu. Similarly, the story of Chandidas. Chandidas was a great worshipper of Chandi, as the name suggests. Now, when he was worshipping Chandi, he had quite good amount of prosperity through his worship of Chandi. And he had a brother who was a Vaishnava, a devotee of Lord Vishnu. So his brother had a Shaligram deity of his own, Shaligram Shila. And Chandidas had a big garden in which he would have flowers for worshipping Chandi. So one time, his brother woke up early in the morning and he saw there are so many beautiful flowers. So Chandidas' brother asked Chandidas, "See, there are so many flowers, can I take some flowers? Even one flower?" And he said, "Use it for worshipping my Shaligram Shila." Chandidas said, "Nothing doing. So all the flowers are meant only for Chandi, you cannot take even one." So his brother felt bad, but he was respectful. He went away. And then later he came back, and when he was just passing by, he saw these beautiful flowers. He thought in his mind, "If I could just offer these flowers to Shaligram Shila, it would be so nice." So when he thought like this in mind, his attitude was so devotional, and his intention was so sincere and pure to offer the flowers to the Lord, that became Manas Puja. and those flowers were offered in the mind. So when these flowers were offered in the mind, they became uchishta, they became prasad in a sense. Then his Chandidas came and he took the same flowers and offered them to Chandi. Now when you offer them to Chandi, at that time, Chandi appeared as he was reciting the verse. Chandi said, "I am pleased with you. Please tell me, what do you want?" So he was surprised. He says, I'll ask later, but first tell me, how is it that you became pleased with me? I have been worshipping you the same way for so long. You didn't become pleased with me, he says. Chandi said, "Today you have given me the prasad of the Lord of my Lord. That's why I am pleased with you." "What do you mean?" Then Chandidas was told the whole story by Chandi Devi. And Chandidas asked, "You mean to say worshipping Vishnu is better than worshipping you?" "Of course." He says, "My Lord is Shiva and Shiva's Lord is Vishnu." He says, "He's the Lord of my Lord." Chandidas said, "Why didn't you tell me this?" So Chandidas, "You never asked me this. You're so busy asking me, give me this, give me that, give me that. I was just giving you whatever you asked me for. You came for worshipping me. Something, I gave that to you. But today, because you did extra service, you offered me the Mahaprasad of my Lord, of my ultimate Lord. Therefore, I have given you this revelation. Worship Lord Vishnu. Worshipping him is the ultimate goal of life." So eventually, Chandidas became a great Vaishnava. He would write beautiful songs glorifying Lord Krishna's intimate pastimes. And he still kept the name Chandidas because he considered Chandi Devi to be his guru. She had guided him to Krishna. And that's why he kept that name. But he did not worship Chandi per se. He was a worshipper of the Supreme Lord. So in this way, we see that the system of demigod worship can work. And those who sincerely, purely, or those who by some circumstances happen to worship the demigods in a proper way, they will be elevated upwards to the worship of the Supreme Lord from the demigod worship. But at the same time, it can also happen that the demigod worshippers become mistaken in their understanding that the demigod themselves are supreme. And those who worship the demigods like this, then for them, the worship of the Supreme Lord becomes difficult because they start thinking that this demigod is only supreme. So in such a case, then they cannot become liberated from material existence. So Krishna says, for such people, what happens? Then the demigod worship is not necessarily a progression to Krishna. It becomes an alternative destination which keeps people away from Krishna. So when it is integrated as a part of a step-by-step framework, it's a progression which will take people closer towards Krishna. But when people, due to a misunderstanding, so the people consider the demigods to be supreme, then what is a progression becomes a misdirection. And that becomes an alternative destination which people cherish as the ultimate, almost like the ultimate goal of life. And when they cherish it this way, then it takes them away from Krishna. Or it keeps them away from Krishna. They're already away from Krishna. They stay away from Krishna in the same material world that they were earlier in. Krishna talks about this in Yanti Deva Vrata Devan Pitran Yanti Pitravrataha Bhutani Yanti Bhuteja Yanti Madhya Jinopi Mam. So Yanti Deva, those who go to Devatas, worship Devatas, go to Devatas. Those who worship the Pitras, go to the Pitras. Those who worship the Bhutas, go to the Bhutas. Those who worship me, come to me. So basically Krishna is saying, here it becomes an alternative destination. And the Ishopanishad is focusing on that possibility, which has a high probability, because many people who worship Devata start thinking of the Devata to be supreme. So then it says, Andham tamaha pravishanti, that they enter into darkness. Ye asambhutim upasate, that those who worship the asambhuti, those who worship the temporary, they stay in the darkness of material existence. They do not get elevated. So, to understand this concept of demigod worship better, let us look at how demigod worship is talked about in the Bhagavad Gita. Now, four significant verses from the seventh chapter are critical for understanding this. Let us look at these four verses. Kamaistaistairita jnana prapadyante anyadevataha tam tam niyamamasthaya prakrityaniyatasvaya. So here Lord Krishna is telling kamaistais. Kama is material desires. Rita jnana, the knowledge is abducted by material desires. And because of that, prapadyante anya devataha, that they surrender to other gods. And when they surrender to other gods, what do? Tam tam nyam asthaya, that they worship those gods according to the rules which they like. Prakritya nyata svaya, according to their own nature. So now, what exactly Krishna is telling? Let's look back at the earlier example. If you remember, I had given off the prince who leaves his father, the king's palace, and goes off. Why does he go off? Because of the desire for self-centered enjoyment. Similarly, this verse is saying, Kama istaiste ritagyana. Because of the desire for self-centered enjoyment, ritagyana, the intelligence is lost. So just as a prince can leave the father, the king's place, because of self-centered desire, the soul whose intelligence, whose knowledge has been taken away by material desires, goes away from Krishna. And what does it do? Prapadyante anya devataha, surrenders to other gods. Just like this prince, instead of living with his father, goes and starts serving some other lord in the hope of getting something from him. And whom does he go to? Tam tam niyamam asthaya prakritya nyata svaya, according to one's own nature one serves. So basically Krishna is telling how a person, instead of coming to him, goes to somebody else. In fact, this section comes after the section which gives two extremes of people. In 7.14, in this chapter, Krishna has said that material nature is very difficult to overcome, but those who surrender to him can overcome it. Then 7.15 talks about those who don't surrender to him. That's one extreme, the negative extreme. And 7.16 to 19 talk about the four categories of people who surrender. That's the positive extreme. So now, in between the positive extreme and the negative extreme, that is those who surrender to Krishna and those who defy Krishna, are those who surrender to someone other than Krishna. So Krishna is talking about this category of people now. And the demigod worshippers fall in this category. So now Krishna will describe how this system can also get those people to come back to him. So in the next verse he says, what happens to them? So now they are serving somebody else because they do not want to serve Krishna. Now what does he do? Yo yo yam yam tanum bhaktaha shraddhaya architum icchati tasya tasya cha tasya chalam shraddham tameva vidathamyaham. So yo yo yam yam tanum bhaktaha, those who, whichever tanu, whichever form, that means the different devatas have different forms, different natures, different kind of mentalities. So shraddhaya architum icchati, so they desire to serve according to their own nature. They want to have shraddha and they want to worship. Tasya tasya achalam shraddham, so they desire faith so that they can worship. Krishna says, I make their faith strong. Tasya tasya achalam shraddham. Achala means not unsteady, steady. Shraddha tam eva vidhamyam. So Krishna is saying, I give faith to those people in the particular devata that they want to worship. This is fascinating. Why will Krishna say that I give faith? That is because, going back to the earlier story of the prince, the father wants the prince to at least come back in his kingdom. So if the father knows, okay, my son, you know, he has some negativity against me, but still, when he will like this minister. So I'll send this minister into his life. And he will like that minister. And when he goes and sees that minister, I will ensure that the minister has the right powers, the right prestige, the right positions, by which my prince, my son, will be able to develop faith in him. So Krishna is saying that I will give faith. Now Prabhupada writes in the purport that I am in everyone's heart as super soul. So Krishna, through the super soul being present in the heart of all living beings, gives faith when they want to worship a particular devata. Why? By this he is getting those souls who are turned away from him to turn indirectly towards him through the medium of the devatas. Tam eva vidhamyaham. So even the faith that people have in worshipping devatas, that is coming from Krishna. Why is Krishna giving them that faith? It is like, remember, getting a 40% student to rise to 60%. If the student could rise to 80%, that is best. If the prince who has left the king's palace, the father's palace, comes back to the father's palace, that's the best. But if he can't, at least let him come back to the kingdom. So let the 40% person rise to 60%. So Krishna accepts them back indirectly through the devatas. Now, when he does this, what happens next after that? Then sataya shraddhaya yuktas tasya radhanam ihate labhate chatatah kaman mayaiva vihitan hitan. So sataya shraddhaya yuktas, equipped with this faith, yuktas is equipped with, engaged with, shraddhaya, with this faith. Which faith? The faith which Krishna has only given them. Tasya aradhanam ihate. They wanted Shraddha to do Archana. Shraddhaya architum ichyati. So Krishna, now Krishna gives them that Shraddha and they start doing Aradhana. And when they do Aradhana, labhate chutataha kaman. They get their desires fulfilled. They had gone away from Krishna because of kama istais. That was 7.20 said. Now Krishna says that kama will get fulfilled. Labhate chutataha kaman. They get the kama. But how are they getting it? Mayaiva vihitanitan. Krishna is saying it is I who give it to them. How does Krishna give it? Because ultimately the ministers are getting everything from the king. So when the minister is paying something to all employees, including the prince who is now currently working under him, the minister is getting that from the king. So mayaiva vihitanitan. All the demigods, whatever blessings they give to their worshippers, it is Krishna who gives them power. Just as the king gives power to the minister, and the minister gives benefits, emoluments to their employees. So Krishna is saying that he only runs the system. Now the acharyas explain also that when Krishna says, I give Shraddha, how I give Shraddha? One more way is through the Puranas. Different Puranas glorify different devatas. There are Sattvic, Rajasic and Tamasic Puranas. So Sattvic Puranas glorify Vishnu and devotional service to him. Tamasic Puranas glorify Shiva and Durga and her worship. And Rajasic Puranas glorify Brahma in general. So these Puranas also are an arrangement by Krishna by which that particular devata is seen as attractive by the worshippers or by the potential worshippers, and then their faith develops. So Krishna gives faith to them, they worship and their desires get fulfilled. So now if Krishna has only made the arrangement, then what is wrong with it? That arrangement can just go on as it is. Then this Krishna describes in the next verse. This is the last verse in this section where Krishna talks about demigod worship. Antavattu phalam tesham tadbhavati alpamedhasam devan devayajo yanti madbhakta yanti mamapi. Krishna is telling, they get the phala, labhate jitta kaman was said, but that kam which is there, antavat tufalam tesham, that the phala is antavat. Antavat means temporary, it is going to have an anta. And tadbhavati, and they get it, who are they? Alpamedhasam, they are less intelligent. Why are they less intelligent? Because they don't understand that they could be getting the eternal by putting in the same effort, same amount of time, energy and thought to worshipping the Supreme Lord. What is the temporary result they will get? Devan devayajo yanti. Those who worship the devatas will go to the abode of the devatas. Madbhakta yanti mamapi. Those who worship me will come to me. So here Krishna is clearly telling that the demigod worship is not exactly the same as worshipping him. Although it is a system created by him, but still it is not exactly the same as worshipping him. Why? Because it will lead to a different destination. Just by serving the minister, the son will not come back to the father. The prince will not come back to the king. For that, the prince has a prince's intelligence has to awaken, his consciousness has to, similarly the soul's consciousness has to evolve, and the soul has to rise from the level of worship of the demigods to the worship of Krishna. If that doesn't happen, then the soul stays as trapped in the cycle of worshipping the devatas, getting temporary results, exhausting the results, again returning to the worship. And this Krishna will talk in 9.20 and 21, where again he talks about demigod worship, and there he says it's temporary. People may go even to the heavens, but te tam bhuktva svargalokam vishanti kshine punye martil lokam vishanti te tam bhuktva svargalokam vishalam. They may get a lot of enjoyment in Svargaloka, but after that, kshine punye, when the punya gets over, martilokam vishanti, they will come back again to the earth, will fall back. So, devan deva yajo yanti, madbhakta yanti mamapi. By worshipping Krishna only, we will go back to Krishna. By worshipping devatas, although we are staying within the Vedic fold, we will not go back to Krishna. We will continue on in the cycle of birth and death. We'll go to their abodes, when the punya gets over, come back here. Again we may worship some devatas, again go up, again come back. And if sometime we get misdirected by bad association, we may even stop worshiping devatas, and then we can even go down to the lower species or the lower planets. So that's why, andham tama pravishanti ye asambhutim apasate, that those who worship the devatas, they worship the asambhuti, they stay on in the dark material existence. They are unable to come out of this existence. For them to be able to come out, they have to worship the Supreme Lord. So, let us summarize what we discussed with respect to the system of demigod worship. The purpose of demigod worship is to get back souls who have left Krishna, turned away from Krishna, through the help of an intermediary. The system of demigod worship demonstrates Krishna's unparalleled compassion, utter non-enviousness, great selfless desire for the elevation of others, of all living beings. Even if they are not ready to love and serve Him and worship Him, still Krishna desires their well-being. And just like a father, a king whose prince has gone away from him, even if the prince is not ready to come back to the father, still the father takes care of the prince by sending ministers. And then gradually, through the medium of the ministers, this person, the prince, will eventually come back home. That means come back to the father. So we discussed four levels, that the prince goes away and is serving some other master. Like that, the soul is serving some other materialist, some other living being, in the hope of getting enjoyment. Then the prince comes to the father's kingdom and is serving a minister. That is like the soul coming and serving a devata who is representing Krishna. Then after that, the prince comes and starts serving his father, but still for material gains. So that is like the soul coming and serving Krishna, but for material gains. So the lowest level is godless materialism. It is often vikarma. The second level, where the soul is serving the devata, that is karmakanda. And the soul is serving the Supreme Lord, but for material gains, that is sakam bhakti. And when the prince comes back home out of loving regard for the father, that is like the soul coming back to Krishna to serve him out of love, that is kevala bhakti, shuddha bhakti. So there is this extraordinary progression for the soul to come back ultimately to Krishna. So coming to the demigods is a step higher. But if this higher step is considered to be the highest step, then that mistake can sentence the soul to stay on the cycle of birth and death. So the student rise from 40 to 60% is good. But if the student thinks 60% is the highest, then and there's nothing more to be got, then the student will not achieve any higher potential. And the difference between demigod worship and Krishna worship is not just a matter of 60% and 80%. There's a huge difference. Because demigod worship cannot liberate a person. It's only worship of the Supreme Lord that liberates the person. And that's why in this Ishopanishad verse, it is said that even those who worship the Asambhuti, the temporary, will not be able to attain eternal destination. They will continue on in the cycle of birth and death. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.